Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahulastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Richard Herring's Great Theatre Podcast with Scroobius Pip. And we have an advert. It's unusual. We've been very selective with our adverts this time. This is someone who helped us out with the Kickstarter campaign, which is why you're getting all this for free. So do support them. Fallen London is an award-winning story-based text adventure game that you can play in your browser. And it's free. This is crazy. They paid for this advert. It's set in the reign of Queen Victoria. London's been stolen and dragged below ground to a vast cavern where hell is close, immortality is cheap, and the wine is made of mushrooms. Fallen London offers you different stories depending on your character's choices, including things you never usually get to do in games, run a salon, run a newspaper, or behave so disgracefully that you have to flee the city and write pleading letters home. There are 1.2 million words of darkly funny stories to enjoy. Sign up at failbettergames.com/RHLSTP, Rahulastapa, to get a treat just for Rahulastapa, listeners/viewers. Thank you very much for that, and thank you for supporting our podcasts. Now enjoy Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who helped compile the 1990 West London phone book. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Hello! How are you doing? Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Oh, there will be some cool kids watching today because we've got someone cool on. They call it Rahulastapa. Hooray! We've got a lovely audience here. You two are much better than last week's audience. A lot better. There was no one sitting there last week. There was just their 2 empty seats, and then you two now here. What's your name, madam? Zoe, it's lovely to meet you. You got a badge there. I'm just zooming in on the badge. Just want to make that. Thank you for buying that. They cost a pound, didn't it? That will help us make. What do you do for a living, Zoe? You work for a housing association, and I've stolen a pound off you. I feel pretty mad. Thank you. Is it good? Is it a good housing association, or are you throwing poor people out of houses all the time? Yeah, good. Good stuff. Because now people are seeing you. Is this your? He's done pretty well for himself, hasn't he? I was going to say, is this someone you're helping care for in the community? How are you doing, Graham? You all right?
Yeah, very well.
Good, that's good. Right. He hasn't assuaged me of that feeling, having spoken to... What do you do for a living, Graham?
I work for a housing association.
You work for the housing association as well? Did you meet at the housing association together? I should be filming all of this. You didn't meet at the housing association.
You were in there, and then you said, "I can get you into the housing association." Is that why you got together just for the housing association job? Yeah, mainly for that. That's good. It's good. Is it good money, the housing association? Yeah, better than what you were doing before, down and out in the streets. Yeah, good. It's nice that you've helped. I'm glad. Nice you've helped him and made him feel part of the community. So it's good to be here. I will now introduce my second guest. I'm sorry, my only guest this week. It's a very different week. Many things have happened. He is probably best known for his appearance on the short films The Corner Boys. Anyone seen that?
Yep.
Yeah, good, isn't it? It's rarely is something that's actually quite good that I've mentioned at the top. Ladies and gentlemen, Scroobius Pip! Ladies and gentlemen, here he comes, hopefully. There he is. Come in. Welcome. Thank you very much. Sit down. There's a microphone.
Hello.
The Corner Boys.
Yes.
It's good. I watched, my wife said to me, just as I was doing the nearly finished preparing for this, she said she'd seen you interview Brett Goldstein.
Excellent.
And then they played some of The Corner Boys.
Yes,
which is,
it was good fun.
Short films you're in.
Yeah, we did these little shorts about two kind of middle-aged drug dealers who are on a corner, but the kind of unwritten bit is we're on the wrong corner,
right.
But we're too scared to leave because we've got to sell all the drugs or we'll get in trouble.
Yeah.
So they go on just continually, just us not selling anything because we're on the wrong corner. Well, there's no one going to be there. But yeah, that's kind of all they are. But it's good fun.
Are you doing more of them? There's three of them I've
seen. Yeah, we've done three and we're going to do more. Brett Goldstein and John Drever, who I'm doing with, have just done Super Bob, which is amazing. And yeah, now they've finished that, we're going to do a couple more, we think.
Cool. Yeah. Will it become a movie as well, like Super Bob has?
I don't know. That'd be nice. John keeps joking that we're going to just do them for years and then make Super Boyhood, which Boyhood is obviously the Richard Linklater film, which he filmed over 30 years. So yeah.
And is it quite scripted, or is it quite? It has a feel of being improvised, but is it?
Yeah, there's a mixture. We'll email back and forth some ideas and scripts, and then we'll forget it all and talk nonsense on the day. The biggest problem for John editing is just us just giggling at each other all the time because Brett's just, he's got a funny looking face.
He has.
And his voice is funny. So, yeah, and similar. So it's kind of, we go back and forth on that.
Was that something you wanted to get into as well as into acting as well?
Yeah. I'm on a year or two off from gigs at the moment and I've been doing some acting and the first film I've got is I just did earlier this year is a Guy Ritchie film that comes out next year and then I've been doing a TV series by Kurt Sutter who wrote Sons of Anarchy and The Shield and stuff like that and it's great because everyone else on them are like actors and that and I just run around all excited just going look at that, I've got to ride a horse on a beach with a sword, it's brilliant. Best it was in Wales. It was amazing.
But luckily with that beard, you don't have to do as much acting as
exactly.
The others.
It's all covered. Or both the things I've got cast in are medieval.
Because
I look proper fucking medieval. So I'm just trading off that at the moment and it's fine. There's no real acting there. There's just turn up, have beard, leave. Get on a horse, yeah.
We've already talked with each other this week at great length.
Yeah, we talked for 90 minutes almost, I think it was in the end.
So we've traded off on podcasts. I did your podcast on Wednesday. It would be out before this,
I believe. It'll be out before this. So you will have been on my podcast on December 2nd, I think.
Right. I think this is out in sort of January.
So it's so confusing because it's the future to people here, but the past to other people listening.
It is.
It's manic.
Yeah. So, we probably said everything we need to say to each other
already.
Yeah,
so thanks for having me on.
That's all right.
It's been really lovely. It was great. I do my Distraction Pieces podcast, and we did. I like it because it ranges from half an hour sometimes to 90 minutes, and we got a good 90 minutes out of it, so it went well. But I've had some where it's just been really... It's got a bit stuck.
Right.
And it was nice that we spoke perfectly comfortably and freely and it felt like we didn't have to fill anything.
I could go on if I need to, that's the thing.
Yeah, that was great. I did, I got some emails done.
So you've got a disparate number of guests, kind of a smorgasbord of musicians and that and comedians. And
it's a real range from a Wes Borland from Limp Bizkit to Billy Bragg, to Simon Pegg, to Russell Brand, and Paddy Considine, all sorts of,
So how do you get all those people on it? Because then, like, can I get them on mine?
Yeah, easy. Mainly Twitter.
Yeah.
Mainly Twitter. But that was exactly it. I realised I was listening to a lot of podcasts, and I realised that from doing music, I'd met a lot of people who were nice.
Yeah.
And it was kind of, or met or had contacts with. I basically looked, I decided to do a podcast as soon as Twitter brought that thing in that you could look at your followers and click who's verified. And therefore, they're worth having as a guest, right? That was. And if they're following me, they must know who I am. So yeah, I then just started to go through that list
clever.
And hit people
I've never
up.
I've never thought of looking through
admittedly
so many followers. It would take me a long time.
Yeah,
to do
no,
that,
no. But there's the verified button. There's a separate thing that you can click, so it only brings up the verified one. It gets rid of all these people.
Yeah, good.
It filters them out and just holds the podcast worthy.
No, oh, well, that could be useful. Though it might be upsetting if I look at that and find it's nobody.
Yeah, that would be awkward. It would just be me on again. Like, oh, he's verified. You know?
But yeah, it's kind of interesting that people, I mean, that is the great thing about Twitter, I think, in terms of, I mean, and for this as well, that you will contact people who, if you tried to contact them via their agent, won't. If ever I try to get someone on via their agent, it becomes quite difficult.
I've not had anyone on via their agent, and we're on this, I think you're the 70th guest, I think.
Really?
And yeah, the only time I've had an agent get in touch was when I was doing this, I was having Simon Pegg on, and I'd all arrange it, and the agent got in touch, and I was like, oh, it's going to be awkward. They were just being lovely. They said, can we hear it before it goes out? I was like, not really. It's not really how it works. We kind of do it, because they're quiet, it was normally a week's turnover at that point. I was like, not really. And they're like, well, can you just send us some bullet points, because we want to try and get some extra press for it. I was like, oh, right, I thought you were checking up on me. As I was, if it's just to get extra press and help out, then sure, listen away. It was more the fear of, I don't want them to say you can't have this in there, you can't have that.
Yeah.
When it's, you know.
Yeah, that can be. Well, people have, and as we were saying, people do open up in this podcast.
Really
sometimes.
Do. So, yeah.
But there's something about the medium of it. It's very. And it's, well, I suppose because I think like we've sort of in the very different fields, we've sort of embraced similar ways of doing things because you're a very self-contained unit of creativity.
Yeah.
So
completely.
You started off in living in, which I want to know a lot about, Stanford La Hope is where you grew up.
I still live there.
Do you?
I've lived there for 34 years.
It doesn't
probably
sound
33.
Like...
33. I had a year in Wolverhampton.
Oh, did you?
We don't talk about
it
that.
It doesn't sound like a real place, Stanford La Hope.
No, it doesn't.
And it sounds like it's half French.
Do you think it sounds... fancy or not fancy? I can never decide.
It sounds like it sounds like it's in The Hobbit or something.
Yeah,
it doesn't feel like
instead,
it's a real
it's in between Tilbury and Basildon. So couldn't be less hobbitish, could it? Really, it's not. It's it's
like
a little
the
town.
Hope as well. It sort of feels like if you've got the potential there for it to be nice, but it's not.
No,
it's not nice.
Stanford, but Hope. Is
always
commonly called.
Yeah, there's the dream that if you live there long enough.
Yeah,
something may blossom.
So imagine what could happen. Stay here, stick it out. I've lived there my whole life. It's a little town. It's a weird one because it's not amazing. But I realised for years I thought I loved Stanford, and then I realised that I loved basically all the stuff in my living room because that's where I stay. That's the only place in Stanford I go to. So yeah, Stanford's great. I was like, well, I mean, my house and my mum's house, and that's it. But it's a weird one. It's kind of it's not as horrible as I make out. There is still some racism there, some homophobia, some just small mindedness. But for some reason, I really feel it's important to remain surrounded and aware of that kind of thing at points. I did a few Christmases ago. This is a story that involves you, so perfectly topical. But I did one of Robin Ince's shows at Christmas.
Oh yeah,
and. Being a fan of so much comedy and all sorts, I'd just done this gig at Shepherd's Bush Empire. It was one of their big ones. And there was you, there was I think Coogan had come on and Brian Cox and loads of amazing people. And I'd got to do a poem in a sold out Shepherd's Bush Empire and everyone paid attention, enjoyed it. And it was amazing. And then I left to get the last train home and some girls from Tilbury tried to steal my trainers and set my beard on fire. And that's really good for keeping you grounded, I think. If there was a point where I was like, man, I'm mixing in some good circles here. This is really... It's why I've stayed there. And I also feel, again, when you've got a life where you tour an awful lot, if you move somewhere, you're not really going to get to know that area. Or particularly the time I moved last, I was touring 8-9 months of the year. So it's like I'd rather the bits where I am home, it feels like home.
Yeah.
And it's familiar.
That's cool. So you worked in HMV.
I worked in HMV for years, yeah.
Where you met Dan Lussac.
That's where I met Dan, yeah, yeah. And I loved HMV. I thought it was good. Yeah. That was in the days when HMV was staffed with... that sounds like I'm about to insult the staff. But it was kind of known that HMV staff were all really into music. And you could go in there and ask advice and they had back catalogue. And a Virgin Megastore was more... They just had the big new releases and that. So, yeah. Particularly as it was pre kind of file sharing and that. Yeah. It was genuinely a great education in music and film because the people who worked there were passionate about it. So you could generally get recommendations and get tons of good stuff. So,
How did you progress to doing your own stuff? I mean, was it all very kind of homemade and you set up a production company?
Yeah, it was all very homemade. I was doing music and working in HMV and kind of telling myself that I'm a musician, but I'm doing a job just to pay the bills. And then it got to a point where I was getting offered I'd got up to a lower management or whatever, and they were offering, I think I got offered or asked to apply for an assistant manager job. And I thought, right, either I need to stop pretending I'm a musician and focus on retail, which I must add, I think is fine. Like, I really enjoyed it. I was good at retail. I can sell shit. I'm good at selling Scum on £5 to people from Essex. The film Scum, not... I decided, right, I thought I saved up for a while, and then I thought, right, I'll take a year off to just do music. So I've got nothing... I've not got a job to fall back on at this point. And if I don't succeed after a year, I'll stop, and then I'll go on and do something else. And it was almost a year to the day that That Should Always Kill came out, which was my first single with Dan Lussac, and it got in the top 40, and I've not had to go back yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of kind of amazing to make that decision.
Yeah, yeah.
And not from a position of, I mean, you had enough, you'd saved up enough money to live for a year, but not in great luxury.
I say that we were discussing earlier that not really ones for spending money on loads of things or luxuries, and it was I look at it now and I think it was something like £5,000 or £6,000 I'd saved to live for a year. But I lived at home with my mum and I spent a lot of it. I spent £700 on a 1987 Toyota Space Cruiser,
right,
which the seats could fold down to make a bed. So I toured the country and lived in that for a good while. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of interesting because I think you're sort of wanting to do something and then getting out there and doing it. And a lot of people say, oh, I can't do this because it's too difficult. And it is, breaking into music, I would imagine, is, especially as someone doing it yourself, is more difficult. And in this century, it's more difficult than anything.
Turns out it's easy. Turns out it's easy. I did it for a year, had a song in the top 40.
Yeah.
Been doing it ever since. Piss. I don't know all this kind of touring for years and never made it. It was easy.
Yeah.
But no, I do.
I'm going to give it a go. I'm going to take the next year and I'm going to do it.
I do think there is an element of, I've always been convinced that even just within my circle of friends, I don't think I'm particularly more talented than a lot of them. Some of them, proper more talented than. There's some idiots. But the majority of them, no more talented, but the simple thing being, I went and did it.
Yeah.
It was that actual thing of going, right, no, I'm actually going to do this. And then that's, if you do it, then... If you don't do it, there's nothing they can buy or can engage in.
If you don't do it, it's not going to happen.
That's the rule.
If you don't bother trying to do it, you won't do it.
That old fable. Like my granddad used to say. No, but again, I can't remember who I heard it. I'm sure it was a Seinfeld quote or something where it just said, if you've got something to fall back on, then you're going to fall back.
Yeah.
So it was that thing of going, right, I'm not going to have a job. I'm not going to have a career path anymore. Therefore, the music had to succeed and... That's kind of the way it's gone.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to this about Louisa a few weeks ago, Louisa Armand, and a few weeks ago about how, although I think within the arts industry, there's a lot of rich people now who are, who public school educated and have a parent who can buy them somewhere to live and who are, who are able to do this job because it does take a certain amount of not earning any money and work. So if they have that money to go. But also, if you don't have the money and you don't have anything there, then you really have to work.
You really have to push every day.
So in a sense that you think, oh, it's not fair because of this, but actually because I think you really need the drive to make it in any of this.
I couldn't agree more. I was doing... At first, I went around the country a lot, and that was a nerves thing as much as anything. I was far more comfortable performing in front of people I could have a legitimate feeling that I will never see again. I mean, that's not very ambitious on career, but so if it's shit, then it's like, it doesn't matter, yeah. I'm not here. I'd rather than playing in front of my friends. But then when I was back in Essex, I was coming in and doing three or four open mics a week in London just because you could. It was an option, and you don't know who's going to be there. And I learned, again, it was pure chance, but I learned that that gave me the image of being far more successful than I was, because I was a 6'4" guy with a beard called Scroobius Pip. It sticks in your mind. So if people were in the spoken word scene, someone had mentioned they'd seen this guy, and someone else would go, oh yeah, I've seen him, and not kind of registering that they'd all seen me at nights that anyone could have got up and performed at, because there's instantly that, oh yeah, I've seen him as well. It's like, yeah. Well, it gives the illusion that I'm this successful touring artist when I just turned up a lot. I wasn't getting paid anywhere.
But when you were driving around the country, sort of, were you generally turning up at venues and seeing if there was a gig, or had you planned
what I did
ahead?
Was, me and my mate Chris, who's here tonight, and was actually here last week for Hal as well. We watched yeah, Hal last yeah, week. It was great. so we would tour around, and originally I had like either a boombox with some backing tracks on, or I had a little speaker and I'd just do spoken word, or I'd beatbox into a loop pedal and rap over the top, which sounds great in films and stuff, but when you're doing it in Manchester city centre, they're not that up for it. They don't really want to hear poetry. I think it was in Manchester, we lasted 10 minutes before thinking we were going to have all of our equipment robbed, and it didn't cost much. So we quite early on just went, right, actually, just going to where the most people are isn't actually that logical, because they're there for a reason and they're busy.
Yeah.
So what we then started doing was we'd get to each town and we'd buy a magazine of some sort and look up the gig listings and see who was similar. So if there's someone in a similar a genre to me, they will literally get everyone, all my potential fan base, and literally line them up against a wall for me outside their gig. So I'd just turn up to their gigs and do a little performance. I was always adamant I wouldn't busk or try and sell anything, because I think that instantly changes the mindset. You're instantly on the defensive a bit if someone's saying,
yeah,
sling some money. I'd say at the beginning, look, there's a gig, there's going to be some support bands, you've paid for that, you've got one free, buy one, get one free. So I'd do a little I'd do a few songs, I'd hand out flyers of where they could hear more about me. And again, that was always key to me, because the thing was, no matter how good you are, it's hugely arrogant to think that they're going to remember you in the morning when they're on their way to see a band that they were already aware of and love. Yeah. The fact is, they're going to watch them and that's what they'll remember the next day, or they'll meet a girl and they'll remember that they met a girl rather than some bearded bloke in a suit shouting at them. So I'd make sure they had something in their pocket that they could then find that and go, all right, I remember that guy. And yes, so we did that for a bit, and it kind of, it's weird. One of the gigs was a $1.65 gig in Camden at the Barfly, and when I then so that was in probably 2006 maybe, and when I released my first solo record on my own label in 2011, someone in that that queue had made a beat for it, because he'd enjoyed it and got in touch down the line. And it's just those weird things of people that had played on them original shows just all tied together.
Yeah, and the first record you put out, you just put a fake barcode on it.
So that was the first, that was in 2000. Like, so I've got a tattoo on my leg there that's a pistol, and I've got a commemorative pistol for when my label launched properly in 2011.
Yeah.
But on my ankle there, I've got a tiny little one. So on that one, it says SDR 11, and that's a record label is Speech Development Records. And on the one there, it says SDR 06, because it technically I launched in 2006, but it didn't have a barcode on. It had a catalogue number, but I didn't register the catalogue number anywhere. That was just numbers. I just saw them on records and thought, I should pop one of them on. So my original launch of the label was just me selling them hand-to-hand or over MySpace. So
yeah. The
proper launch, where it was in shops and stuff and had barcodes that worked, was in 2011.
Right. But, you know, again, that sort of shows this spirit of just wanting to get the stuff out there. And
again, the spirit of conning people.
Yeah.
Of making them think I'm already successful. Because they're like, oh, he's got an album out. It's like, yeah, I went and paid that man to make it. I worked in a record shop, I saved up and I paid a man to make a thousand of them up for me, and
right,
it was the illusion of being signed and being successful. It's like, no, idiots.
Yeah. But I think it's, your stuff is very...
It's fine now, I am signed and stuff like that, so I... It's,
but I mean,
not
it's,
really.
it's doing it yourself, which I guess, you know, as we talked about in the other podcast, is this, the yes. internet allows... smaller acts that aren't, you know, that don't have that massive reach to be successful and to make money. And you know, your website is, I mean, you've got like loads of merch.
I've got loads of merch.
You've got an apron
there.
You can buy on your,
got
on
an
your
apron,
website. For
I've
example.
Got woolly hats. Yeah. Yeah, all sorts of stuff. Mugs.
Yeah.
I'm about to. It might be out by now when this goes out. I've had a little action figure made. This artist called Riker, he's an amazing artist, and his art sells for stupid amounts of money. He wanted to make these little plastic Scroobius Pip action figures. I was like, I'm well up for that. So yeah, there's stupid amounts of merch on my website, which is a weird, it's a lucky thing of coming from music, because that seems far more acceptable and part of the thing. I remember a year I did the Edinburgh Fringe, and it was the year you did We're All Gonna Die. After the show, I'd have my merch outside, and I had a few different bits. And I remember a Nick Helm coming up to me afterwards and saying, "That kind of how do I do this? Like, how?" Because he felt incredibly awkward doing that. But because I'm so used to that in music, that's what you have to have your merch. That's how you make your money. But he was like, he felt, oh, I feel like I'm being greedy or anything kind of thing afterwards, like being there and trying to sell it. I was like, no, that's what you do, isn't it? And I was the only one in that particular bit that ever, I had to get them to get a special table out for me and everything, because no one else was doing any merch. I was like, I've got loads, I've got a book.
But, you know, I think also, well, I was looking, you did your Edinburgh print, it must have been the same year, and you did a double DVD or CD.
I did a double DVD of that. And again, that was trying to look at, being a massive fan of stand-up, it was trying to look at, I always like trying to look at what works in different genres and different areas. So I did that live show as a £5 download in the same way that Louis C.K. had blown that up, and Aziz Ansari and all these other people. And then I did a double DVD, but with loads of extras, because again, it seemed that people didn't do it. Or on films, you don't get that many extras anymore. No. So I did a disc where Tim Key interviews me, and then I did a chat with Kate Tempest and Moussa Okwonga and Polar Bear and all these extra bits and all the music videos I've directed, all my solo ones were on there, and all the just tons of extra bits. And
But it's like only a tenner, but then because you're producing yourself, then that financially
exactly because
works
it and... wasn't. I didn't. The Edinburgh show was the first thing that I decided not to make available on iTunes or Amazon or anywhere else. So it's only there.
Yeah.
Because again, it makes it exactly that. You can make it ridiculously cheap. The audience are getting a deal, and you're getting 100% of it rather than this tiny little a section.
Well, it's very similar. Only again, it's very similar to Go Faster Stripe, who make my DVDs. It's like you're not bothering to encrypt it.
I spoke to one of the guys at Go Faster to get advice at the time because I bought the Fist of Fun one.
Right.
That put out you guys and things like that. I hit them up to kind of make some inquiries and say, what do you think the benefits are of this and that? So yeah, it's literally
by not encrypting it. You're trusting that your fans.
Yeah.
Well, also there's not, because not necessarily there's not that, you know, there's not millions of pounds in reproducing our stuff. The people who want it will buy it, and the people who don't want it, but
exactly
they know if they trust you, if you're giving it for £10, then no one's going to go, oh, let's put this up online as well. Because well, let's not do that.
I did on my first. On the proper solo record in 2011, which is called Distraction Pieces, which ended up being the name of my podcast, a week before the album came out, I released a fake torrent of it and uploaded it. And the torrent, I used the original beats, so it was all the right song lengths and times, so before you download, you wouldn't know. And it was basically a DVD commentary. It was me just talking over the beats and first of all explaining that if you're stealing this, you're stealing directly from me, but then saying that the first song, oh, this is, the drums are from by Travis Barker, and just doing this and explaining everyone involved, and then just really getting across in a hopefully entertaining way. I was watching a transfer deadline day on Sky Sports at the same time, so I was also giving some updates on what Joey Barton was doing and stuff like that, and kind of just, it was a way of making it a light and fun, but also making it clear that there's not some major label that you're ripping off here. Everyone I mentioned, oh, you get some interesting facts. Like, oh, he did the drum, like Zane Lowe produced this beat, and he hadn't produced anything in ages since he did this, and now he's done this and that. And so you had some interesting stuff, but it made generally everyone, as far as, or everyone who contacted me who got it, did go, yeah, fair play. I went and paid for it after that. Because it was, you know, you kind of, you've got that, and you're like, all right, there's some effort there to say, don't be a dick. Instead of just chastising people, just kind of trying to make it a more entertaining and interesting way of getting that message across.
Sure. I mean, what I like about your stuff, obviously, is very, I mean, there is an element of comedy within it.
You've obviously got
a like of comedy background, but it's very lyrically witty and clever. So what comedians would you, are you as influenced by comedians as you are by musicians?
Yeah, hugely. And I think the thing that where my subject matter wise, I tend to go quite dark and serious at points. I think it's really essential to use some humour in there as well to get that across. And again, I mean, looking at like across to America, otherwise I'm just going to keep mentioning you and other people and it will get awkward. But looking across to America, people like Louis C.K. and Doug Stanhope, people like that, who will talk about some really serious and dark stuff, but will subvert it so well by getting either really offensive or really shocking and then bringing it all round to having a more serious meaning. And again, I like with the Edinburgh Fringe show, the thing I was most nervous about was I'd written some gags to go in between and to link things and to make it all go together and to purposely have these moments of lightness that then turn into a really serious dark bit. And that was the bit I was most nervous about, because I'd never had anything like that in that area, and particularly Edinburgh, it being known for its comedy, and I was essentially doing a spoken word show rather than a stand-up show. As the mixture of that cunning and seeing people that, are so skilled in getting serious messages across, but it not feeling like a lecture. I think particularly with spoken word, in that whole scene, you're always at risk of feeling like people are coming out and getting chastised and then sent home to think about all the wrong in the world. It's like, it shouldn't be that. I've always been, my aim has always been that when people come out and see anything I'm doing, that it's a good night out and it's entertaining. Yeah. And then hopefully there's some interesting things to talk about or think about or debate afterwards. But in general, the primary part should be they've had fun.
Yeah. Because for me, I know I always go on, I don't really like music. I do like music, but I find it, so much of it is, you know, I think when you're growing up as well, so much pop music, it's so glib and the lyrics are so... I mean, I always liked music that was lyrically interesting.
Yeah.
And it seems
completely.
To me to not, you know, and the music's obviously a big part of it, but to have that opportunity and not use your song to get something across.
Yeah,
or
completely.
Or to have the poetry of language as well as music seems insane.
Yeah, completely. It always used to annoy me, and I use Coldplay as an example, which they're an easy target, but it always used to annoy me when Coldplay were doing an awful lot of really good political stuff and really good charity stuff, and then they'd release another weepy love song. And it's like, 10% of your audience are going to see that interview where you talked about some really serious stuff. 100% of your audience are going to hear this song.
Yeah.
And you can put some content and some seriousness in there and still do it in a way that isn't, you know, they're really talented musicians. So you could address some serious subjects in a way that's still enjoyable, that's still artistic, but all of your audience will hear it rather than the few who are looking at this interview where you're, or where you've drawn on your hand or some shit or whatever they used to do.
I played Trivial Pursuit with him, so there you go.
Did you win?
I can't remember, but every time he landed on history, we'd sang Yellow at him.
Brilliant. Did he call them cheeses or wedges?
I wish I could remember. To be honest, I didn't know.
It's important.
He's a friend of Al Murray's, and I went round to Al Murray's house, and he was there.
He's lovely.
He's a really nice guy. I really, really like him. I didn't really know any, because I don't know much about pop music. Yeah. And it was early on, but
he hated it.
They were pretty. I don't know if you do. The second time I saw him, I said, I've just been to Australia. Your album's on for sale in Australia. You're doing really well.
Thanks, Richard.
It's going okay. That's how little I certainly knew about music then. But yeah, he's nice. Nice guy. You've obviously got a stutter.
Yes, I have got a stutter.
Noticed. I noticed it with my ears. And you think this came from a drowning incident?
Yeah, it came from when I was drowning. I find stutters absolutely fascinating because we don't really understand them. But when I was 16 or so, I found out I had hypnosis, or 14 or 15, I had hypnosis, because it turns out that stutters generally come from a traumatic experience. You don't tend to be born with a stutter. See, I'm stuttering more now we're talking about it. Jesus. So when I was 5 or 6, I was on holiday in France and I nearly drowned. I was walking along the beach and a wave swept up and took me out, and my dad came out and saved me. And at the time, I didn't know it was a serious thing because my parents really played it down. Like, I always remember my dad just saying, "Oh, you've ruined my trainers." and so, yeah, it was played down. But my mum, again, I found this out years and years later. My mum, after it, was starting to really panic because I was. She kept hearing me talking just on my own.
Yeah.
She's like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "Oh, I'm talking to the voices." And I could hear these. Apparently, I could hear voices. So they took me down to Lourdes and got holy water and put holy water in my ears to get rid of the demons.
Wow! Did it work?
I think it gave me a stutter. That damn holy water. I'm going to sue the Vatican. But yeah, no. Again, I got that, and then it developed more and more as I was growing up. It was worse at school. It's things like it's worse on the phone and stuff like that. But
yeah.
It's interesting, man.
Well, it isn't, but it's also interesting. I mean, there are other performers. Daniel Kitson is a good example. That you would sort of think, well, that's another hurdle to overcome if you're going to be a singer or a performance artist.
Again, I get tons of really nice messages from people with stutters saying how brave it is and stuff like that to do. Because, again, the podcast, the radio show, everything kind of based around speech. And I always feel bad because I'm just forgetful. And I start these things and commit to them and forget that I've got to start. Genuinely, when I got my radio show on XFM, I'd kind of agreed to it. And then they made a deal, or someone did a tweet saying, it's so bold of them to give a hip-hop show to a white guy in his 30s from Essex who's got a stutter. And I was like, oh, shit, yeah, that's who I am. I'm not a 20-year-old black kid from the Bronx, am I? Shit. So, yeah, genuinely, I just forget these things. And then I've committed to it, so I can't really do much about it. But, no, it doesn't bother me. I always think of the stutter as more of an accent type thing. Like, I've got people, I was with a mate, Aris, who's from Newcastle, and he sounds ridiculous. And it's no different from me sounding, you know, ridiculous at points when I stutter. So, yeah, I kind of think of it like that. Almost every word is a mess from his mouth, so it's more W's and D's that I get stuck with, so it's only a few.
That's fair enough. I'll try it. Have you ever seen a ghost?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you've had voices in your head, that might count.
Maybe I've heard a ghost. I don't think I've ever seen a ghost. No, it's always, I find, it always annoys me that people often see ghosts. Like, I had a friend of mine who really, really believes in ghosts, and she had this big experience where she was away somewhere and staying somewhere a bit spooky, and this a figure appeared at the end of her bed and was there, and it was scared her, and then it went away in the morning and stuff like that.
It was probably Hal Cruttendon.
Yeah, it probably was, with his sleep gropes. questionable. And I just had to explain what that is you were asleep.
Yes.
Is what happened there. Because the clue is you were in bed. And then you went to sleep.
Yeah.
That's the clue. That's the starting clue. And then you woke up. you woke up and there was a ghost at the end of bed. You didn't wake up. You had a dream that there was a ghost at
the
end of your bed.
But the ghosts know that, and so wouldn't they appear deliberately at a time when it would be suspicious?
Maybe.
To keep the air of mystery going, which I think they like. That's right. Otherwise, they would just, if they didn't want the mystery, they'd just go, hello, we are real.
Yeah,
leave us, either leave us alone or whatever.
And that's the thing that gets me is I know for a fact I would fuck about so much. I wouldn't be, they wouldn't be able to hold me down. I'd be appearing and doing all sorts of kooky stuff. So I don't believe that everyone who's ever died has towed the line of keeping it a bit mysterious and pushing a DVD over and stuff like that. It's like, as if you can get them all to toe the line. There would have been some prick just really messing about. So yeah,
I think you might be right. You may have. Have you ever seen a Bigfoot?
I've got big feet.
Yeah,
size nice. 11, 12.
That's quite good.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
It's not. You can't just shout things out. I've had to work very hard to get this position where I can say stuff to Scroobius Pip. This is like. And now you got to shout, I like your shoes. They're
this
nice
is my
shoes.
Third. This is actually my third pair of these.
Is it?
So I like them. I'm terrible at making. I don't like having unnecessary decisions in my life.
Yeah.
So years ago, I stopped having anything other than the exact same brand of black pants.
Right.
Because I thought making the decision of what pants to wear is a decision I don't need in my life. That's unnecessary thought. Each morning, go, oh, shall I wear these ones? Or these? Yeah. I just pick them up and put them on.
Yeah.
And I got a pair of these trainers years ago, and now I just order a new pair. On the regular.
I'll just zoom in on them for... They're the same as I did to that woman's breast. It's not as exciting this though.
They're Swizz Beatz Reeboks.
Are they?
So
okay.
Made by the producer Swizz Beatz.
Oh, cool.
Which is with three Zs.
Cool. Well, maybe we'll get sent some free ones now.
Yeah,
we put it on this.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I think I'd look good wearing those.
Yeah, we'd all... I think everyone could do with some nice Swizz Beatz Reeboks.
Good. Anything else you'd like to say before we move on? Is it all right? Thank you. They are good. They're proper Jeffrey West shoes.
Yeah.
I'll just go into their boots. They're quite old now. I've just recently had them resold for the third time. There we go. They cost like, they're like 200 quid or something.
Yeah.
They're a lot, you know, they're good shoes.
And Jeffrey West, that's one Z, isn't it?
Just it is. He's from Northampton. As all the good shoemakers are.
Yeah.
Got some fans in Northampton now.
Northampton in the house.
Yeah. If you were the Prime Minister,
yes.
Would you use nuclear weapons? If you had to, or if
I mean,
you didn't
again,
have to.
Yeah, it's a good reason for me not to be Prime Minister because that sounds right fun. That'd be irresistible. As said, I'd fuck about as a ghost. Yeah. I'd definitely fuck about as Prime Minister.
It's a shame to have them and not use them, I think.
Yeah, exactly. They cost a fortune.
They do.
Imagine I never put these bad boys on my feet.
Because I presume they get when you spent them, you bought them, there must have been loads of times, and they last for a certain amount of time, then they're decommissioned.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just at least send them. I'd at least shoot them at the moon or something.
Yeah, just shoot them into space.
Yeah.
Fireworks night.
Yeah.
Big global fireworks night thing. We all shoot our, if we all do decommission, we should all shoot our nukes at the same night into space.
might have repeat. They all hit the moon. We actually took the moon out that moment. The moon is our friend in many ways.
Yeah.
It's a part of the reason we've survived so long. You know, a lot of the asteroids hit the moon, so you might think, oh, that'd be harmless fun, destroying the moon.
Yeah.
But think of the tides.
Yeah.
Women's periods got to be connected.
Yep, exactly. That we wouldn't have anywhere to send creepy old men.
That's true.
At this time, that's topical.
It is, yeah.
When this comes out, it won't be topical.
It's almost nostalgic by the time this comes out. It's almost like I love 2015. It'll be by the time this comes out. You remember they did the advert? Oh, what was that about? That old guy, what was his story? Do you think having sex with a robot should be counted as cheating?
No.
Good. Thank you. So the voice is rising for the anti... It being cheating voice.
You see, I definitely.
It's not a person. It looks like a person. It's not a person.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I'm not even sure that this. It's going to sound bad if I say I'm not even sure if it's bad that it's a person, because that's definitely cheating.
It is cheating.
Just let me explain further. I've never. There was a thing recently about a pop star got in trouble for using one of their massage parlors.
Right.
That do dirty bits at the end of it. I've never used one myself.
No.
But I was thinking, well, he's not doing that. There's no actual connection with the person there.
Yeah.
And possibly even less connection than he has mentally when he's at home masturbating over porn.
Yeah.
So why is that worse? Because it's clinical. It's not emotional. So it's similar to a robot. I'm not saying that Thai massage people are robots. That's offensive.
They could be, though. In the future, they could well be.
They probably are now. I find that confusing, because why would a robot be more of a sin? Is it a sexy robot?
Definitely.
Well, there you go. If it's a sexy robot, again, that's no different from watching porn and imagining.
Well, that's what I think. Well, there's lots of things that are allowed in most relationships.
Yeah.
As a just a little release valve, you know.
Yeah.
You know what it gets like when you're with that. You have to look at that every day. I'm pointing at the bloke.
Yeah,
you have to have, you know, imagination at least. Hey, just occasionally, you think that you imagine it's me, don't you? Just occasionally. Yeah. Tonight you will, even if you're not going to. That will, it'll just pop into your head now. It's because I've done the association just for a second. It'll be
for both of you as well. Yeah. So.
And that's, you know, they can't imprison our minds, can they?
No,
they can imprison our fingers, but they can't imprison our mind. Well, they'll be fine. I think it'd be interesting. It'd be an interesting experience to have sex with a robot. I don't think it'd be that good. No. I'm often an early adopter of technology, and I think
that's one you want to wait until it's. Yeah.
And I think the first sex robots will probably be quite
dangerous.
Yeah,
frankly, edgy, yeah, sharp,
just
jagged.
Mangy, you know. But I will still give it a go, just on principle.
Yeah. For the good of everyone.
Yeah. I'll ask you. I'm going to go with one of the other emergency questions that we haven't gone too much. Matthew Plumridge, which is, you know, that's enough on its own, isn't it?
Yeah. My answer is yes.
It's not a yes or no
Matthew
question. Matthew Plumridge, which is, you know, I must have said this the last time. We've all got, all men have a Plumridge. That's why it's not. But his ancestor must have had an amazing Plumridge. Must have been like one of those lizards with the necks.
Yeah.
He was
going for it.
For them to call him that, why would you call him? The only reason you would be called that.
Yeah.
He says, would you prefer to shit yourself every time you saw someone eat a banana, or ejaculate every time you saw your mother-in-law / father-in-law / I don't know, in your case, if you're not a married gentleman.
Not married, but yeah.
Partners, far parents. It's not a very good question. I don't know why.
It's tough. I'd rather. I mean, I just. It makes me glad to live in a world where that doesn't have to be a reality. It makes me really. There's a lot of bad things going on in the world, but I don't shit myself every time I see someone eat a banana, and I don't always ejaculate when I see my mother / father-in-law.
You could, I mean, you could answer most of my questions in that way. So, if you had to go for a week's holiday with one of the puppets from Spitting Image, do you ever watch Spitting Image?
Yeah, I did, but I was really struggling. Again, like when I was here last week for How's One.
It's a hard question.
I was really struggling to remember who people that were on.
Well, David Mitchell gave the, you know, I shouldn't have stopped asking the question, because David Mitchell gave the perfect answer.
What did he go for?
He went for Melvin Bragg.
Yes.
Because he thinks he would choose somewhere nice to go on holiday, and also the puppet wouldn't be that irritating. You could spend a week with that puppet.
Yeah.
And it would probably have a reasonable conversation. The people who were operated would have to stay in character of what they imagined Melvin Bragg would be like.
Yeah.
That would be, even though it isn't Melvin Bragg, it would still be quite an interesting week.
Yeah, no, that'd be nice.
So he's answered the question.
Yeah, no, he's nailed it. I would choose to go on holiday with them, because David Mitchell seems delightful as well. Yeah. So I'd just tag along on their holiday, if that's acceptable.
Maybe we'll just do that for everyone at the end of the run. Yeah. All of the guests can go on holiday with the Melvin Bragg. It's going to cost a lot of money. I don't know who will fund it. We'll have to kickstart it.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm up for
that. Do you
think
people will pay for that? They won't pay for me playing snooker. I'm trying to raise £1 million for me to play snooker against myself.
Yeah.
Like, people who are listening to this at home will know whether I've succeeded or not. There's still 10 days to go.
Oh, wow.
And I'm at £55,000, which, you know, in one way you go, well, that's not very near to £1 million. In another way, you go, that's £55,000.
It makes me think of when, was it Kate Moss or Naomi Campbell was saying, I don't get out of bed for less than
this. Exactly.
I don't play snooker with myself for 55 grand.
I wouldn't do that.
How dare you? Do you think I am sitting around hoping to play snooker with
I find it insulting. So it's interesting to see, you know, it's interesting what people will fund and what they won't. So if I went to them and said, I've got 100 guests I've had on the podcast so far, and I want to pay for them all to go on holiday with the Melvin Bragg speaking English puppet, which you'll have to buy from whoever bought it in the auction, and we'll have to find the original puppeteer and the person who did the voice. They're coming as well, but no one can address them. But then it's a much more interesting holiday, isn't it? Because you're on holiday with Stephen Merchant.
Yeah, it's great fun.
I mean, no one would talk to the Melvin Bragg puppet.
No, exactly, the poor puppet. But I think what you should now do is if... by some freak of nature, your Kickstarter does not achieve the snooker, you should contact them all and say, would you be willing to keep your bid on, transferring it to pay for a holiday for everyone who's previously been on? Because 55 grand could cover us. We don't have to go anywhere fancy.
That's true. Well, it's up to the Melvin Bragg puppet. That's the unknown element of it.
Yeah, I don't think it'll have expense. If you've given him a budget, you didn't say you couldn't give him a budget.
That's true.
You've got 55 grand. There's 100 people to take away. Take your pick.
We have to find a time when they're all available.
Yeah, exactly.
We have to somehow press getting them into the ones who don't want to come.
It's doable.
Who didn't have a very nice time on this.
I mean, a free holiday with Stephen Merchant is it's going to tempt anyone.
He might be one of the ones who's difficult to persuade.
My enthusiasm for a holiday with Stephen Merchant might put Stephen Merchant off at this stage.
Sport is intrinsically stupid. Discuss.
I love sport. Okay, I was up until 6 o'clock last night watching sport.
What sport? You like that? What sport do you fancy?
Mixed martial arts.
Okay.
Typical.
That doesn't really count as a
sport. Typical bearded poet.
Doesn't.
Loves a bit of cage fighting.
Doesn't really count as a sport when it's just made up. Though.
It's not made up. That's wrestling you're thinking of.
I was deliberately being. Yeah, I know. Trying to cage fight you.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm a big fan, and I also enjoy the football.
Yeah.
Again, I do feel they would be sport in general would be among the most challenging things to explain to an alien life form.
Yeah.
So I concede they are kind of ridiculous because again, it's like we're all chasing that ball, and when we're happy if it goes there, but not happy if it goes there.
Yeah.
It is ridiculous, but it's a bit of fun, isn't it? It's a bit of fun.
Yeah. Well, there's an escapism to it, I can understand. And it's a drama without a script.
Genuinely, one of my emotional moments as a human was at a football game. I don't know why I specified as a human. In my other forms, there's been far more emotional moments. But I'm a Millwall fan, and there's a player called Neil Harris, who was nearly our top goal scorer at one point, and then he got testicular cancer.
Okay.
And the club stuck by him. It's all going to get very serious now. The club stuck by him and helped him and kept him on the wage and everything. And he got over his he beat his testicular cancer and came back. And it took him a while to get back to speed. And we were towards the end of the season, I think, and we were at home, and he hadn't scored since he'd come back. And we were against, I can't think who, and we're in their area. That's a technical term. in their penalty box. And one player had a chance for quite an easy tap in, and I swear there was about four or five just passing it around until he got in position, and then he scored. Whole team brought him on their shoulders, brought him to the home fans. Everyone was just the most beautifully emotional and human moment from a bunch of burly men who don't really show emotion. So, yeah, it felt worthwhile in that moment, Richard.
It's hard for me to resist saying about the 1,000 jokes I thought of during it.
Yeah. No, it's fine.
Because although testicular cancer isn't amusing... testicles are really amusing.
Yeah,
that is funny. That is the terrible dichotomy I found myself in. And I'm quite proud of myself for getting through it.
It's obviously, it's a terrible a faux pas to give away anyone else's material or gags on podcasts and that. But there's an Anthony Jeselnik joke that always comes. It's very short, but he just said his friend phoned him up to say he had cancer. And obviously... That's never a funny thing to hear from anyone, but it was the way he said it.
which just kills me every time. But it's true also that you gave... Is it true you gave out your phone number on... Was it on the podcast?
I've done that by mistake on Twitter once. When Twitter... I didn't have an iPhone, and there was a thing where you used to have... If you wanted to put a picture on Twitter, you'd text the picture to a number,
okay,
and then it'd upload it. Sometimes I'd accidentally text that picture to Twitter, and Twitter would tweet saying, you have a photo message from 077, and so on. I'm not going to give it out again now. I've learnt from my mistakes. But yeah, every now and then I'd have to then just ignore my phone for a bit, and
right,
it wouldn't go well. But yeah.
Okay.
Not fun.
But someone rang. Did someone ring up who was suicidal?
Yeah, yeah. I had an intense one because I've got a few. On the first album, I had a song called "Magician's Assistant," which is about self harm and suicide. And someone, it's weird because this kid rang up and was like, "Hello." And at that point, if I answered one, I'd just pretend I was my brother.
Right.
Which is weird because they don't know my brother, but we do sound quite alike. So it was convincing. And I'd say, oh, no, I'm his brother. He used my phone to send it, so it's not work, but yeah, it's not him. And this kid was like, well, I know it's you. And I was like, well, yeah, it's not. And I'd already started the lie.
Yeah.
So I'd started this lie. And then he said, I just wanted to ring to say that I've had a rough time and a magician's assistant has kept me going until now, but I've decided tonight that I'm going to take my own life. Which is tough when you've already started a lie and you're like, well, I'm not him, but don't do it. So I then kind of just discussed, I chatted to him a bit and he was saying he had tickets to come and see me in a month's time, but he decided this. And I was, again, I was saying, look, because I have songs like that, I get a lot of people contact me on Facebook and things like that on these subjects, and I'll always try and discuss, but I'm always also really adamant to say, I'm not an expert on these subjects. And I do believe people like the Samaritans and Calm are amazingly underused. They're such... I love that the Samaritans... It's against their rules. Like my mum's a Samaritan now, and I didn't realise it's against their rules to try and talk anyone out of anything. They're purely there to listen and be a voice and someone to take in, which I think is amazing. So I recommended he talk to the Samaritans, but then I also said that... He said he's had a rough time for a while, and the fact was that if he'd bought a ticket to come and see me in a few months, that at some point he felt he had something... to live for, not my gig. I'm not saying that. Mate, I'm pretty fucking good live, if I'm honest, so you might want to put this on ice for a few weeks. But no, I just kind of said that if you've invested money in something like that, then there was a point in recent weeks where you've seen yourself alive in the future. So just kind of think of that. And he said goodbye, and I kind of said, look, whatever you choose, I hope it goes, you know, the way you want. And then I did that gig and dedicated that particular song to that guy. And I got a message a few weeks later from one of his mates saying that he was there and it meant a lot. He didn't want to get in touch again because he felt awkward and weird. But yeah, that he was there and yeah, it meant a lot. So yeah,
that's brilliant. Yeah,
that's pretty good.
I mean, but then I think with the podcast and stuff, it's a very intimate medium, isn't it?
It really is. It really is. It's weird how, as you were saying, how we people give a lot and tell a lot.
Yeah.
I forget how much, because it's so casual and relaxing, and I'm doing it every week.
Yeah.
I forget how much of my life I tell people and put out there. And then you'll meet someone and they'll mention something, and you'll be like, what? And a lot of my friends don't particularly listen to my podcast. So there's a lot of strangers that know way more about me than my close friends, which is weird.
Yeah. Well, I find it weird if I meet someone I kind of know quite well, and then I'm trying to tell them a story, and they go, yeah, I read it on your blog.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, okay.
Can you,
no, here's a picture of my daughter. Yes, saw it on Facebook.
If you knew you were going to see me, could you not have read my blog today?
Could you just pretend? I'm better than it.
I think that's weird. My brother left a Facebook recently, and I think it's... I'm on Facebook, but there isn't anyone in my life that I care what they're doing constantly. There's not. There's not. Even my... Like, I don't care what my mum had for lunch today. I do not give a shit. I love my mum, she's great, but I don't give a shit what she had for lunch or where she is even. It's to an extent. I hope she's all right. I hope she's happy. I hope she's happy and everything's going well. But it's that weird thing that people... I'm fine with people posting, but it is weird then when people seem to feel you should have seen stuff or you should know stuff. And it's like, well, no, I'd rather meet up and discuss the highlights rather than trawl through all the shit and have something to catch up about. And I do think it brings us together and apart at the same time, if you know what I mean. We all know a bit more, but there's not as much of an urgency to meet up and catch up because, oh, I know what you've been doing this last month.
Yeah, I think, though, if I'd had the internet properly in the 1990s, I'd spent a lot of time on my own playing Civilization.
Yep.
On Saturday, I think we talked about that on your podcast.
Yeah, and, you get to hear that twice.
Yeah. But, you know, I think if there'd been social media, I would have gone out more. Yeah. I think because you would have, you know, there would have been, you'd have found, what I found amazing about Twitter was realizing how many people are at home on Saturday evening watching X Factor or whatever. You go, oh, so everyone isn't out.
Yeah, completely. And I think that is a really good thing. And there's the horror of trolls and people being horrible and attacking people. But equally, I mean, a prime example has been all the trans agenda stuff recently with Caitlyn Jenner and all that. And the fact is, there are more opportunities for strangers to make you feel shit and to attack you. But also, there's far more ability to know that there's millions of people just like you, or thousands of people just like you, who are sitting at home playing Civilization or sitting at home doing whatever. And I think that's amazing. That's kind of a very cool part about it, that you can find these communities and find these like-minded people.
Good. It's also good for terrorists to create their plans and do awful things as well. That's another advantage of it.
It is really good. I know that they started doing... No, there was a thing when... One of the reasons...
That won't seem as raw when this comes out. So well, don't react as if this is... Something else will have happened. Yeah. But...
one of the reasons that Facebook and stuff can block up, and emails can block up if you use it on multiple computers, is because it was a thing for terrorists for a while, so that they couldn't be traced. Rather than sending messages, typing a message and saving it as a draft, but multiple people having access to that same login. So that's their plan spoilt now, I've told you all. It's one in the eye for the terrorists. Can't get away with that shit anymore. We're all onto you. But yeah, I thought that was fascinating, that was a technique. So it's never actually transmitting across anywhere. It's saved in a communal place. I'm not a terrorist. Everyone's looking at me now. Just because I've given some pertinent information about how to be a terrorist and I look a bit like a terrorist, it's outrageous.
Let's move away from terrorism. Yep. It's, you know, that's just a general piece of advice for the world.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of terrorists listen to this podcast.
Me too.
Stop.
It's bigger than the terrorists.
Ones who are still here, stop doing it, it's bad. I'm against it.
Yeah. I'm not a fan.
The audience seem on the fence. Yeah. They're not sure. They're not like us saying we're against terrorism.
Yeah. They're not liking the prejudice against terrorists at the moment. Terrorists are people too. Except the ones, obviously, that have already, you know.
Oh, this is what will get us through. I tell you, this is the only way we'll get through this. What song would you like to see replace our national anthem? You should write a national anthem. I think our national anthem's rubbish.
Yeah, it's not very good, is it?
It's really rubbish, even on the low scale of national anthems.
Yeah, it's really slow.
Yeah.
It's got no vibe. Lyrically weak.
The only bit we should keep in is... Na 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 na. That's it.
Yeah. It's a good build.
That's
isn't
the really
it?
Good bit. Whatever you change, there has to have that in it.
There's a lot of lovely songs. I'd want a song that reflects how crappy we are as a nation. No, I wouldn't. That's a terrible idea, isn't it? We should be covering that up.
Well, there's quite a lot of verses in the current one we have that do point out how crappy we are, but we don't tend to sing them.
Yeah. There's darkness in our original one. I would go for... God, this is a really hard question, but I'm liking it. It's not entertaining for these guys, but I'm liking thinking about it.
Well, we can wait.
Yeah, no, there's no rush. You're not going anywhere. I'd like to go for Shake It Off by Taylor Swift. Because it's just so catchy. It's hard not to enjoy. But I guess we couldn't have an American one, could we?
She's an American. We could.
That'd be fine.
Got a German royal family, so I don't see why.
Robbie Williams, Let Me Entertain You. Imagine that. Everyone can sing it. Because the sequel was that Robbie was cheeky rather than actually having a good voice.
Yeah.
So we can all sing, because everyone can sing this.
And does it have the rap bit in it? Is it I'm an Honorary Sean Connery? Is that one in there?
Oh, that'd be... No, that was... which one was that?
That's going to be that one.
Rock DJ, was it? Oh, yeah. Let's go with Rock DJ. Yeah, Rock DJ. Just confuse them. Now we'll all gather around to sing Rock
DJ.
And
whoever the Queen or the King has to do the rap.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm an honorary Sean Connery. I can probably do it. That's the terrible tradition.
It was Millennium was the honorary Sean Connery one.
Was it?
Millennium collaborating with Kylie, the Queen, the true Queen of England.
Okay, yeah.
So let's go with a Millennium because that's current. I won't go out of date.
There'll be another one.
Yeah, exactly.
There'll be another one long for too long. You'll see. Well, it's been lovely talking to you for a long time this week.
Yeah, we've talked a lot.
We've talked an awful lot. I've got other questions for you. I'm just telling you that.
Thanks.
If you had to have sex with an animal.
Yep.
If you had to.
Yep.
What animal would you choose to have sex with?
Monkey.
Okay. Any particular breed? You seem to have thought about it before.
I'm quite private about my private life, Richard. I don't really want to go into. No, they're cute, aren't they? And they don't look that dangerous.
Yeah.
I'm not a big one. I'm not an idiot.
That's kind of worse.
Oh, wait, is it consensual?
Yeah. Well, that opens up a whole another field of questioning about whether it's possible for an animal to consent. I don't think it is, but I don't think it's also because it's an animal, it doesn't have a moral code, so you're all right.
Cool. We'll stick with a monkey then.
Yeah. Because they don't mind, do they? I don't know.
No, they love it. Dirty monkeys.
Good.
I was at the zoo once and one started masturbating as soon as he saw me. If that's not consent, I don't know what is.
It's definitely coquettish. It's a coquettish way to behave.
If you meet someone and they start masturbating as soon as they see you, yeah. That's more than the, like, you know, say if they're playing with their hair, they like you. If they're publicly masturbating,
yeah. I'm not sure. I think a lot of
they're into you.
I think those guys who masturbate on buses and stuff that I've heard exist.
Is this monkeys still? Or
no, they're human people.
Humans, right? Yeah.
But I think if you were masturbating and then they were you're looking at it and you went and go, would you like to go out for a drink?
Yeah.
I think they would be put off.
Yeah, maybe.
I think what they're getting out of it is they're being is the cheeky naughtiness of what they're doing. I'm guessing.
I didn't realise in your question what animal would you have sex with. There was a full date to go on beforehand. No, I didn't realise that was there.
I'm not talking about people. You know, the masturbating humans. Right, I mean, you've got to feel sorry for those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least invite someone back to a hotel room with a high-backed armchair and then yeah, that is and then it's at least do that. Yeah. I've never done that. I don't know where that story began. Never done anything like it. But I like it. What did you have a deluded thing like my time that I was worried about people would time travel back? I bet you must have lots of deluded things. As a child, this crazy messed up voice in the head child. Did you have a thing where... I mean, that is quite... Yeah. I genuinely was what concerned about. I was concerned about people travelling back through time and seeing me
masturbate
poo or whatever.
Or poo. Yeah.
And judge me for it.
I mean, I pray it never happens. I just want to start with that. Well,
But it's interesting that if time travel became an availability and time travel tourism took off,
yeah,
that would be a weird thing. You know, would there be laws set in place to stop that happening? Would they say, well, you can't go back and see Abraham Lincoln having a bath?
Yeah.
Or could you be
able?
But then if you had it, some people would want to see that.
Yeah.
And they'd say, well, I want to go to the Abraham Lincoln
and
the bath.
And it becomes a bit of a class war on that, doesn't it? You can go and look at other people having a bath, but not Abraham Lincoln.
It doesn't have to be Abraham Lincoln. That was just an example.
I'd like to see it.
Yeah. And whether he still wears the hat in the bath.
Yeah, exactly. I bet he does. I bet he floats in like a little duck.
I think he's got a little hat for his penis.
Yeah. I don't know if I had any ones. I remember I was, for a long time at school, I was really worried that people... I was really wanted to conceal if I was wearing a vest. I didn't want people to know I was wearing a vest. So, yeah, that was a major concern for a long while. Yeah. It was a torn between, do I want to be cold and not wear a vest, or do I want to wear a vest and people might know that I'm wearing a vest? And for some reason, it seems a shameful act.
Well, there was, but there's loads of things. There was in our school, if you went to do, if you had a shit at school, that was a shameful thing.
Yeah, it shouldn't be. It should be celebrated.
It should be. But to the extent,
the bravery.
To the extent, Because if you try to do it, people jump up and look over you and laugh. You go, yeah. You're shitting.
Yes, I am.
Normal, you would shit in the morning and the evening.
Yeah.
I once shat myself at school because I didn't want to have to go. And I was in the sick room and everyone else was in lessons.
Yeah.
And I voluntarily sat in the sick room and shat myself.
Yeah.
Rather than go to the toilet and shit and have a shit in the toilet.
Yeah.
And then walked home with the shit in my pants.
Yeah. And that was preferable than people knowing that you...
And you know what?
Let stuff out of your body.
I was 28 years old and I was one of the teachers. I was, and I was a child. Otherwise it would be weird. Me sitting in my own shit in the... Yeah, isn't that weird?
Teaching.
And that's how... But then there were those coats. And where did that coat come? Where did the vest code come from?
Because
I had the vest thing that was...
I don't mind a vest
if you
now.
Wore a vest, you were... Weak
weird.
Or something.
Yeah.
Like you were a child.
Yeah, you're
like 6 year old
weak.
Child.
You are weak. That is a fact. Children are weak. And they do shit.
They certainly do. Oh my goodness, time has flown by. Like on its winged flight of shit. It was going so well. It's been really good fun talking to you.
Yes,
and really thanks so much for coming along. And you can go and buy an apron on your website.
Yep, you can do that.
Does the apron
speechofanimalrecords.com?
I once interviewed Lucy Pinder, the Page 3 model.
Yes,
and she has a website.
Yep.
That sells all kinds of malarkey on there, largely pictures of her with no clothes on.
Yep.
And one of the things she sells is a bookmark.
Brilliant.
With a picture of her naked on it.
Brilliant.
And I asked her how many bookmarks she sold.
Yeah.
Because I didn't envisage many of her fans.
No.
Well, you know, oh, well, I must. Oh, I've got so far through this pornographic magazine, I don't want to lose my place.
Yeah.
And, you know, that may be insulting.
The story is so engaging.
Do many people buy the apron?
Yes, it sells all right. It was launched as a barbecue apron.
Right, okay.
It's now, a baking apron. I'm changing for the season, so it's a bit of a bake-off thing. No, the apron generally goes down all right, but I've always got stick because of the design of it. I've got a line that was... like one of my most popular lines was on a song called Interdiction. It just says, you see a mousetrap, I see free cheese and a fucking challenge. And everyone wanted me to put that on a T-shirt. I was like, I don't want to just put a lyric on a T-shirt. So I did this... I got this guy to design this complex design where it's a question, and it says... at the top it says... A what do you see? And then there's a drawing of a mousetrap, and then there's some lines, and then in my own handwriting I've written free cheese and a fucking challenge, and then signed it. And it didn't sell that well because it wasn't just the line, it's confusing. People can't get that witty line from that. They have to look and go, so that's a mousetrap, and what he's saying is... So yeah, I thought I'd pop it on a fucking apron instead, see if that sells.
And bang.
Yeah, hit. Yeah. All wearing it on Bake Off. Have you not seen them?
I'm going to bring out an apron as well.
If you could let a Lucy Pinder know, she can have a free apron if she desires.
Okay.
In exchange for a bookmark.
I've got one of the She gave him one of the bookmarks. She sent it on to me.
Right, no, I'd still rather deal directly with her.
Ladies and gentlemen, Scroobie is Pip. Listening to Richard Haynes at the Square Theatre Podcast with me and my guest, Scroobius Pip. The music you're listening to is not by Scroobius Pip, it is by Pest. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. Thank you to everyone at Go Faster Strike. Did I thank Leicester Square Theatre twice in the last one? Thanks to everyone. Leave that in. Thanks to everyone at Go Faster Strike. Thanks to everyone who knows me or my friends and my family have been very supportive. This is produced by Dave Cribb. It's Go Faster Stripe Fuzz and Sky Potato Production. Thank you very much. Goodbye. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Do go along and support our sponsor for today's show, who I don't need to tell you who they are again. We all know who they are. They are Fallen London. That is right. So go to failbettergames.com/RHLSTP to support them. It's all free, so why not do it anyway? And that would be very nice. Thanks to them for supporting us. You can support us too by going to gofasterstripe.com/badges and either buying a one-off badge or a monthly badge, and that money will go towards making future content. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can. And make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.